Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Devin.
And I'm Drexel.
And today on the pod, we are going to discuss John Bolton, who is a hashtag noted dickwad.
Not Michael Bolton.
Not Michael Bolton. Unfortunately.
Unfortunately. Probably would have been better for us.
I would love to talk about Michael Bolton. We're also going to talk about Stormy Daniels, Karen McDougal, and Summer Zervos. And we're going to dive a little bit into Cambridge Analytica as it relates to John Bolton.
Yeah, that's so, going to be fun.
Yeah, good show today. So Drexel, how was your weekend?
It was good. I worked this weekend because I had an event.
Nice.
For spring fashion, which is a lot of fun.
That's so fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Had a lot of model, like had a couple of the models there. And I did these things where... Where I had these big boxes and it looked like they were Barbie dolls in the boxes.
I saw that on your Instagram. Right,
and then people could get in the box.
That's cool.
A lot of the little girls that walked by thought that the models that were inside the boxes were not real.
That's
awesome.
So
when they waved at them, it was a lot of fun. Other than that, it was like a really chill weekend. We were just talking about right before we started recording how slow of a news week it felt last week.
Yeah, yeah.
That probably had a lot to do with the fact that the Stormy Daniels interview was coming up, so Donald Trump really didn't do much of anything.
Which is interesting, and I definitely want to get into that when we talk about Stormy Daniels, because that was a really interesting part of that whole narrative.
How was your weekend? I know that last week was Alex's birthday, so you guys were at Disneyland. Week, so that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and we didn't bring our three-year-old son. Because we're terrible people.
Because you wanted to drink.
Oh, yeah. We went to Food and
California
Wine.
California Adventure.
Yeah, exactly.
I was there. I think we were there in the same week. Because I was there earlier in the week. And then you guys went later in the week. And that Food and Wine Festival was a lot of fun.
It was so great. So we had a great time. And then this weekend, I went to the March for Our Lives in Los Angeles. I met up with a Hellion.
Nice.
Sammy Joe. Which was really fun. And I also took my son to the Natural History Museum.
I saw he was looking at the butterflies.
Yeah. He loves butterflies. I love the butterflies.
I love a good butterfly, too. A little monarch.
Monarch.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all I know.
They're poisonous and beautiful.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
That's one day I'll tell you a story about my butterfly experience as a kid. It was...
I wait with bated breath.
It was not my mom's favorite.
John Bolton is the new national security advisor. Trump is still the president. Paul Ryan continues to exist. I think we could all use a drink. Wink is a new service that makes it easy to try new wines personalized to your taste. And, this is very important, shipped directly to your door. They ask you questions like, how do you take your coffee? Black, like my cold feminist soul. How do you feel about blueberries? Very strong, hard yes. You can try new wine every month and shipping is always covered. Each month, there are new wines, like the extremely popular Summer Water Rosé. Wait, Summer Water Rosé. Wait, how did I miss that one? That sounds delicious. I know what I'm getting next. There are no membership fees. You can skip any month and cancel at any time. So discover great wine today. Go to trywink.com/hellbent and you'll get $20 off your first shipment. That's trywink.com/hellbent for $20 off. trywink.com/hellbent.
My mistake on the intro last week because I practice. If you guys could see me practice before we start recording, I'm like trying to get everything together and I was like, I'm not going to screw this up. And sure enough.
Right. Of course.
I screwed it up.
All right.
And then, of course, you know, Devin puts it in there. And what you guys hear. But messed that up. So, but I had not heard that until somebody pointed out. So I went back and listened. I was like, oh my gosh. That's so funny.
The power of the editor.
Right. Exactly. really big announcement today. So Hellbent, obviously, is nearing or at its 100th episode.
We're hovering around our 100th episode, depending on how you count them and all of our mini-sodes. So it's just been a wild ride.
Really, it's been a lot of fun to watch this podcast grow because I know one of the things that you and I had talked about right before I got here, which was Hellbent's one of the few, if the only, women-driven political podcast out there that I know of. I mean,
yeah, there's Pantsuit Politics, right. which is two female hosts, and they produce the show.
But you guys came first.
No,
right?
No, they've been around.
Okay,
but what I am really proud of is the fact that this show is female hosted. Obviously, Drexel, you're here too, so
yes,
you know. But it's female led. Our entire team is female. Our social media manager, Varsha, our researcher, is obviously female. All of our community managers for our Facebook group are women.
And I feel so lucky to be a part of that.
Yeah, it's been really great. So the news is Hellbent, we are launching a new show.
Whoop whoop.
Yes. So we are launching a show called Bleep What You Heard with Drexel Hurd.
And friends. It's going to be a lot of fun. I know we've been working on this for the past few weeks and trying to figure out like what the podcast is going to be like. So under this Hellbent model, under this Hellbent family, Bleep What You Heard will be something that you guys can look forward to every week. So you get on Mondays, you get your podcast. On Thursdays, you get your interviews. And on Fridays, I will take you out into the weekend with a lot of familiar sound people, new people, stories that we haven't gotten to in the week. And it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I'm
very excited about it. And so it will be produced by me and Drexel and using the same team. And we are really excited to bring you, it's going to be more of an in-depth look.
Yeah. It's more, we talk a lot of opinions on this show. We try to give you a little bit of the facts. I know we're going to be doing a little bit deeper of a dive, a more educational. One of the things that I find that we did not get into in 2016, and I think that a lot of people have, done over these past few months since the election, is how certain things work.
Right.
I was explaining it to somebody yesterday as kind of like a Schoolhouse Rock meets Opinion 2018 podcast,
right.
And I think that's something that we all need. You know, we're all political junkies. If you're listening to this podcast, there's a good chance that you're a political junkie.
Right.
And if you're new and you just kind of want to, you know, get caught up on a friend of mine texted me the other day and said, can you give me a weekly rundown of things that I need to know?
Yeah.
And I said, well, why don't you just listen to my podcast?
Exactly. Exactly.
And why things work. And so, you know, for example, why would Marco Rubio make a decision to tweet something out the way that he did?
Right.
Well, here's why he can do that.
Right.
And why certain things work in the federal government. And I think that's something that people need to know. People want to know. And I think it makes us a better, more informed electorate for that. So be looking out for that. We'll still go through a lot of the same news stuff that you hear every week.
Right.
And we'll get a chance to talk about that.
I love the educational aspect here.
Yeah.
I think the impetus for the concept was, so this is what you're hearing. Bleep that.
Yeah.
This is what's actually going on.
Yeah.
And this is how it actually works.
So the phrase we kind of got from, my friends say it all the time. I'll say it all the time. Say, fuck what you heard.
Exactly.
But here's the real tea.
Right.
And then that's really, and of course my last name is Heard. So,
I love a good pun.
Yeah. Me too. It's very funny. So you can follow at the Bleeping Pod, on Twitter. That's where you get all the information about upcoming guests, about upcoming pods. You will also see that when the first pod launches, which will be in the next week or so.
Yes.
All right, Devin. So like I said, last week was a really slow news week, except for the fact that we found out that pretty soon we're all going to die.
Right.
The caterpillar from Alice in Wonderland has been named the new national security advisor to the president. Can you tell us a little bit about this character?
Yes. His name is John Bolton, and I think you are completely accurate. He is the caterpillar from Alice.
He looks just like him.
He really does. And the mustache.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, John Bolton is a Fox News TV personality, primarily.
Yes. John Bolton before that, though.
Right. Okay. So in today's political climate, that's what he is. During the Bush years, he was nominated to be the UN ambassador. What's interesting about that is that he was never confirmed. He couldn't get confirmed by Congress to be the UN ambassador. What's interesting about him is he was what's called a recess appointment. So he was appointed by Bush during Congress's recess, so he didn't need to be confirmed in the same way. So when people say, oh, he was a UN ambassador, and his Twitter handle is AMB for Ambassador John Bolton, which I find hilarious because no one wanted him to be the ambassador of the UN. And he'd actually even said that the UN was basically bullshit.
Right. And it's interesting that he could not get confirmed at a time where Republicans controlled the Congress.
Right. Trump, in Trumpian fashion, announced the firing of H.R. McMaster as national security advisor and installing John Bolton via Twitter.
Yeah, it's interesting that he would make that determination. Like Donald, I almost forgot his name, which I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing.
I don't know her.
Donald, I don't know her. Donald Trump, you know, when he came in, he liked this idea of being able to control the have these generals around him, because he thought that that projected strength.
Right.
And I think in his head, he figured that generals would do whatever he wanted them to do because generals follow orders.
Right.
In this case, John Kelly, General McMaster, General Mattis, for the most part, who has not been a part of the news, has not been a part of the Trump drama, which I'm really surprised about, because is a huge, I mean, if you just saw the last spending bill, defense got another big $700 million, a boost. And, you know, I think that in his head, he thought that he could control these people and they would do whatever. The only outlier to that is General Flynn,
right,
who probably would have carried out certain orders had that not been the case. But now he's starting to bring in people who he knows will do whatever he says or thinks just like him. And now we're on our third national security advisor because of it.
Right. Which, again, I feel like I say this every show now, but I'm not going to stop. This is not fucking normal.
Right. We've never seen the turnover in a White House a year into the president at this point. And like there's always career people who leave. Sure, fine, whatever.
And like growing pains and that's all fine. But this is three national security advisors in 14 months. That is fucking ridiculous.
Well, one of those national security advisors was because, I don't know, he's a criminal. you know, like it wasn't because he got like fired or anything. It was because like,
I feel like that's not an excuse. Like, don't hire criminals.
I'm just saying, like, the other two, like, McMaster got fired.
Right.
Or he resigned or whatever they're going to come up with, whatever story they're coming up with. And now John Bolton. But with the case with Flynn, again, another outlier because, yeah, I mean, it's not normal to have somebody. But I'm sure had he been national security advisor, like, he would have been just at that same level as Michael Bolton, because he would have carried out certain things that Donald Trump would have wanted, just like John. I called him Michael Bolton, and his name is not Michael. that John Bolton John Bolton is going to be that rubber stamp national security wise for him.
Right. So I want to talk about why John Bolton is a dangerous motherfucker, and why him being in the role of national security advisor is so scary for so many people. And I think the first thing right off the bat is he is a hardliner on North Korea and Iran, and has actually been quoted as saying that preemptive war, so a preemptive strike on North Korea, is the only way to stop a North Korean nuclear weapons program. I mean, think about that. He has proposed in the past striking North Korea. I mean, that to me, especially right now in this larger context where we've been in the, you know, this kind of tumultuous relationship with North Korea over the past 14 months, that to then put this guy in this context just feels like this statement.
I think it's concerning. You know, especially being a military kid, I was just thinking just now, like, you know, this is an opportunity for Democrats to come back out and say, especially the ones that have served, you know, here's why we would not want somebody like this to be serving in an administration like this. We know that John Bolton does not have to be confirmed by the Senate. He can just slide right in. But, you know, it's odd to me that some people like Tulsi Gabbard, some of these people that have the more progressive side that have served Tammy Duckworth. A lot of these people aren't coming out and saying things, even for the most part, Joni Ernst, who did serve as well. You know, those are the people that you would want to come out and say, hey, look, if this happens, if we go into, if we strike another country, here are the consequences that could happen. And I think the American people need to hear that kind of stuff, because I know that a lot of people who voted for Donald Trump, who vote Republican, see our military as a projection of strength without understanding the consequences of using our military, especially when it could have an effect on bringing it back here.
Right.
You know, we're so used to wars being fought somewhere else.
Right.
That if we strike another country, we strike North Korea, North Korea is going to go after, or could go after, military bases across the world.
Right.
That puts our troops at risk. That puts all of our allies at risk. So who knows what can happen? And people need to be straightforward with the American people, to let the American people decide how they want to go about that kind of stuff.
Right. Well, and I think there's a classic economic theory known as guns versus butter. And that's the idea that you can either pay for guns or a military, or you can pay for butter or basically domestic programs, you know, a robust domestic life. The problem is that the United States has worked very hard, I would say since the Vietnam War, definitely into the Reagan administration, to separate guns and butter, basically have it both ways, and to conduct these wars without any real, like you said, ramifications here on American soil. Not even real economic issues here on American soil, at least not in a way that is tangible and that is obvious to, you know, regular people doing their regular lives.
And this isn't 2002 where John Bolton was making those statements. This is a very different North Korea.
Right.
This is a stronger North Korea. And so what we don't want is an escalation to where I think in America's mind, in the minds of most Americans, we go, that's never going to happen. They would never attack us like that. They would never attack one of our bases. Then why go through the charade of telling us how dangerous North Korea is if you did not, the government, if you did not think that they have the capability to destroy American lives, American bases, and hit here in America? And that's not what you want. You don't want us to put us in a situation of being like, well, they did that.
Well, people said that Trump would never get elected. I mean, I just put no stock in this idea. Oh, that will never happen to us.
Well, I'm saying that some Trump voters believe that because America military strength is what it is, that, but we're not fighting on the ground.
Right.
We're not fighting on sea. We're not fighting that air, land, and sea like our military is. We're fighting a nuclear North Korea.
Right.
That's a whole different ball game.
Right.
And so people have to understand what we would be getting ourselves into with somebody like John Bolton, who believes that stuff. Tim Kaine said over the weekend that he believes that John Bolton would have a hard time getting a security clearance. Now, that is that is the story of the Trump presidency.
I was going to say, that's never fucking bothered him before.
Right. So. Which is why would you appoint somebody that would have a hard time getting the basic thing that a national security advisor would. I mean,
it's in the job title.
Right. How can you not have a security clearance if you're not? You know, he was saying that Bolton appeared in a video advocating change to gun laws in Russia in 2013 request of a Russian oligarch who's very close to Vladimir Putin. Tim Kaine had said that his involvement in the speech, you know, and these types of contacts with foreign governments raise real questions as to whether he can get a full security clearance or not. He might have a Jared Kushner security clearance, but he needs the full blown top level security clearance to be national security advisor.
Right. But again, that's never stopped this administration before. Nobody seems to fucking care. Because the president can just, he can give materials to whomever he damn well pleases, exactly. With or without a security clearance.
And I think that that is something that, I believe that's something that Republicans, that's not a road that Republicans want to go down as we get into the midterm elections, because Democrats will say, Republicans, you know, went through a whole 2016 election talking to us about Benghazi, talking to us about embassies and different things like that, and security clearances and emails and all this stuff. And yet, you have a bunch of people in the White House who are in charge of our national security and who can barely get security clearances or have not been able to obtain a full security clearance.
LaCush.
Right.
So here's another point about John Bolton. Everyone's talking about North Korea and this NRA speech that he made in Russia, which we do not have time to get into, but the NRA has some shady money dealings with Russia that maybe would be a great subject of a Patreon episode, because that is some fucked up shit right there.
Yeah, I'd love to know at what point the DOJ is, how much the DOJ is looking into the NRA.
Right. John Bolton is also very hawkish on Iran. And he has been pushing for Trump to withdraw from the nuclear agreement with Iran the Obama administration set up with five other world powers. So here's the problem with that. And this is something I talked to Alexandra Chandler about in our interview on Thursday. Alexandra Chandler is running for Congress out of Massachusetts. And she was an analyst in the intelligence. And I asked her about Trump pulling out of the Iran deal and why that's such a big deal. She made this connection to North Korea because she said, if the United States walks away from the Iran deal and we are then seen as a country who doesn't honor these nuclear programs, then why the hell would North Korea sit down with us to create their own nuclear agreement?
It's extremely dangerous what he's doing, because in working to undermine the Iran deal, which a deal that brings together countries as diverse as Iran, China, Russia, the United States, and Europe, European powers, something good is probably happening there. And it was carefully negotiated for a reason. By working to undermine it, there's cascading problems that come from this. First, it adds to the narrative that the United States can't be trusted to hold up our end of serious diplomatic agreements, which then links to North Korea, because then if he's going to be meeting with Kim Jong-un, if you're Kim Jong-un and you see us tearing up the Iran deal before your eyes, why on earth will you agree to anything to resolve the conflict on the Korean Peninsula?
And I'd be interested to hear what Nikki Haley would have to say about pulling out of that piece of, because essentially, she, you know, this is a deal that is not just between the United States, obviously. This is something that she's got to explain to the United Nations as to why the United States would pull out of an agreement that's been working over these past few months. And the same thing is going to go for Mike Pompeo during his confirmation hearings. You know, even though the National Security Advisor advises the president on matters of national security, he does not advise the president on matters of foreign affairs.
Right, and diplomacy.
And diplomacy. And this is a diplomatic situation.
But it could very quickly turn
into a national security issue.
Right.
However, I would think that the final, or at least the weighted opinion would come from the foreign diplomats and leaders and not national security.
One would think,
and I say that because the Iran deal is just as much about diplomacy as it is about the national security of the United States. And it is not causing a national security issue right now to the United States.
Right. But you know, let's not forget Trump fired Rex Tillerson, who was at least sort of pushing for a diplomatic approach, and installing Mike Pompeo to be Secretary of State, who is not a soft power guy. We talked about this.
Right, but I don't know that Rex Tillerson's focus was ever on the Iran deal.
It wasn't. It was more on Russia. But I think this is a larger diplomacy versus military action debate. And as Trump gets rid of these people who are at least attempting diplomacy and replacing them with hardline military action guys, I think we're creating a bottleneck of diplomacy that's going to change.
Or doctrine. The Trump doctrine, which would have been more military versus diplomacy.
Right.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that piece of it. I don't know, and I think this is part of the reason why he would want the general, why he's trying to get rid of these generals as fast as possible, because they're probably saying to him, this is not a good military option.
Right, right. Well, and I also want to point out that the firing of McMaster, which has been swirling, you know, this isn't like a brand new revelation that he could possibly have been fired. But in mid-February, he did make disparaging comments about Russia's meddling in the 2016 election that drew ire of Trump, who tweeted that McMaster, quote, forgot to say that the results of the 2016 election were not impacted or changed by the Russians. So obviously this is a person.
But that's really what Trump really cares about.
Exactly. And so it's hard not to see this as a move to remove this guy who also believes that Russia meddled in the 2016 election, and Trump doesn't like that narrative. I'm going to put a pin in this for a minute, but I want to bring it up that the timing of Trump firing McMaster and surprise tweeting that John Bolton is the new national security advisor is very curious. And it came exactly as the Karen McDougal interview was airing on TV. We're going to come back to this when we talk about this more in depth, but I just want to put a pin in that and say this isn't just a national security move, at least in Trump's mind. And I think that's a very important point that we need to think about when we're thinking about all these personnel changes. There's one more thing about John Bolton that I want to talk about before we move on. And that is that he is known for having a temper. And I think this is important, again, in a larger context. We have to think about this administration in a broad sense, and we have to think about who this person is, who John Bolton is in a broad sense. So there is a 2005 piece from Time magazine entitled simply John Bolton's Temper. And this was written after Bush appointed him as the UN ambassador. And it tells the story of this woman named Melody Townsell. She was working with Bolton for a private subcontractor on a 1994 U.S. Agency for International Development mission in the former Soviet Republic of Kyrgyzstan. So Townsell, this woman, says that she wrote a letter to AID officials complaining about the lack of funds for the project from the contractor, a company that had hired Bolton as a lawyer. In response to this, she said, quote, Mr. Bolton proceeded to chase me through the halls of a Russian hotel, throwing things at me, shoving threatening letters under my door, and generally behaving like a madman. Mr. Bolton then routinely visited my hotel to pound on the door and shout threats. I really want this to just sink in for a minute, because this is not the first time that we've heard about a man who is abusive to his coworkers, and particularly his female coworkers. And nobody seems to be freaking out about this.
And I'd be interested to know. I mean, I don't remember his original confirmation hearing, and if this information came up during that confirmation hearing. So I'd be interested I'd have to go back and research, or if somebody has seen that.
No, I believe that they did, because when he came up for confirmation, nearly 60 retired diplomats, many of whom had served under Republican presidents, they signed a letter opposing this confirmation. And top Democrat Joe Biden said Bolton, quote, dealt with visitors to his office as if they were servants with whom he could be dismissive, curt, and negative. So I feel like this was public record. I feel like this was known.
This Melody situation.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think that when Democrats win the House back, the oversight on national security will be, so, I mean, if Trump thinks he has it hard right now, the walls crushing in on this administration come November will be suffocating because they won't know what to do. And they'll, I mean, Democrats will just roll people in every week.
Right.
And John Bolton will have to answer for a lot of this stuff. This stuff will come back up again.
Right.
Somebody will bring it up. Have you chased somebody down the hallway recently? You know, could you see Kamala Harris or Dianne Feinstein saying that?
Yeah.
Have you been putting threatening letters under people's doors very recently? Like, you know, and just an embarrassing parade of these people.
But is that going to matter? We know it now.
I think Democrats will be able to control that message a little better.
Yeah.
Right now, we just can't hear about it because Republicans are not going to bring that kind of stuff up. But again, this is something that Democrats can, you know, Democrats who, you know, Tammy Duckworth and Dianne Feinstein, Kamala Harris, all these people, the people on intelligence, these people who have served, Democrats have to get out there and at least say something,
right,
in opposition to this, or at least give people the knowledge to be like, we told you this was coming,
right, right,
and you just didn't hear, and not only did you hear it from the pundits, but you're hearing it from us who have the intelligence, who have read through the intelligence to give you that information.
Right. I also want to talk about what you were alluding to, Drexel, which is that John Bolton is largely going to be a yes man for this president. And I think that there's an important piece here, that there's not a direct line and it doesn't exactly fit together perfectly, but John Bolton had a super PAC named the John Bolton Super PAC. And they hired Cambridge Analytica in August 2014, which was just a few months after this firm was founded. And while it was still harvesting the Facebook data, so the Facebook data that they illegally obtained from more than 50 million users. So Mr. Bolton's Super PAC spent nearly $1.2 million primarily for survey research, according to the New York Times. And one of the Super PAC's largest donors was Robert Mercer. And who's Robert Mercer?
Of the Mercers.
A, the largest Trump donors, and B, primary funders of Cambridge Analytica. So again, this isn't like exactly fitting together, but Mercer, who donates to the Trump campaign, who founded Cambridge Analytica, who was donating to Bolton's Super PAC, who then took that money to hire Cambridge Analytica, which was funded by Mercer, which then put money into Trump's campaign, which was also being funded by Mercer. I mean, it feels like
money laundering.
It really feels like it. I mean, there's a like a hot fucking mess in there.
Yeah.
And I think that that's all very convoluted. And it's hard to explain and it doesn't make a lot of sense. And you're kind of like, why do I care? But then John Bolton shows up and is all of a sudden appointed to be national security advisor.
Here's the other thing about the John Bolton appointment, which is for a few weeks we had heard John Bolton's name. I feel like Donald Trump is one of those people that the more opposition an appointment has, the more he wants to appoint them.
Right.
We had talked about, you know, people, John Bolton's name had come up on cable news almost every time we talked about H.R. McMaster. So I feel like had people not mentioned John Bolton's name,
He wouldn't
be national security advisor.
Although I have questions about that because of this whole John Bolton Super PAC Mercer Cambridge Analytica swamp.
Right. I mean, like, I get that John Bolton is a Fox News contributor and that's probably part of the reason why he got appointed. But like if he wasn't on people's radars, I feel like Donald Trump set a trial balloon out and said, let's see who's going to make the most noise.
Right.
Let's see what appointment, if I say this person, this is going to cause the most problems. And if they cause the most problems, they're the right person for me. And that's exactly what happened with John Bolton. And here we are, you know, a few weeks later being like, we told you. And all the news organizations, New York Times, like, we told you, but you know,
I also think that goes back. I think you're right, though. He made a huge bang. And the timing of this is important because what we're going to talk about next, which are all of these women who are coming out against Donald Trump. And somehow in the midst of all of that, John Bolton gets dropped on us like a freaking nuclear bomb.
Yeah. And the other part of, and we talked about the foreign policy part of it. And the national security part of it. John Bolton's also going to have to deal with Russia from a national security standpoint, especially as the news comes out today of us expelling more Russian diplomats who were serving as double agents in the United States.
Right.
Like, right. When you put it like that, like that kind of narrative should alarm Republicans and Democrats on both sides.
Right.
There should not be a single diplomat who's serving as an agent to another country. Like, I know we probably do it.
Everyone does it.
You know, everyone does it, but like not when we're in the middle of a situation where Russia has interfered in our democratic process,
right,
and you're allowing these people to roam free.
Well, and I also think that the only reason these diplomats are being expelled now is because Congress, and we don't know who, snuck a whole bunch of provisions about Russia sanctions into the spending bill that just passed.
And didn't say a word.
Didn't say a word
Democrats
about it.
Democrats were like, we won't say it if you don't say it.
Right. And no one did. And so it got passed. And I also
Trump
find it.
Doesn't read.
Exactly.
He went ahead and signed it.
Exactly. So I think that's the only reason this is happening now. But that's a really good point about Bolton and Russia as a sort of relationship that needs to be monitored. All right, Drexel. So let's talk about Stormy Daniels.
Yeah, it was the summer of it's going to be the summer of storms.
Summer of storms. I also love that this other woman that's suing Trump is named Summer.
That's why I said it.
Summer Zervos and then Karen McDougal.
Yeah. Did you watch the 60 Minutes
interview? I sure did.
What did you think?
I thought that I think that Stormy Daniels is extremely charming and a great subject to interview. She told her story. She was upfront about her motives, and she seemed credible to me.
Yeah, I think Karen McDougal was obviously credible in her interview last week, Stormy Daniels. Listen, I thought the interview was great for what it was. I'm sure from what I saw on social media, a lot of people were disappointed that there wasn't more of a bombshell. And I think that, you know, people...
If we're gonna get a bombshell, it's not gonna be on 60 Minutes. I don't know what to tell you.
Right. But I also think that we're in the time of the special counsel where he also slow rolls things out.
Right.
And I love the way that Stormy Daniels and her team are rolling this out to make it a slow burn.
Right.
And they're playing that game that Donald Trump has played. Just a little bit differently and a little bit better.
Well, this is why I'm so enthralled with the Stormy Daniels story, is because she's playing Trump's game and she's doing it better than Trump does it.
And I also like, and this goes back to something I said last week, I like that Democrats don't have to be in it.
Oh, they're like, you know what? I'm gonna let this sort itself out.
And she's just coming at him like a freight train. And, you know, there were some things about last night's interview that were very, that I was like, well, that's a little TMI. Not that it didn't make for a good story, but I was like,
you didn't like the spanking story.
I was like, I don't want that image in my head. Not, you know what I mean? Like,
too late.
And I think that to your point about Stormy Daniels's team slow rolling this and sort of making it a slow burn, and the fact that this interview wasn't this huge bombshell is testament to the fact that. That's why I think this is going to bring down Donald Trump ultimately. Have you noticed that he has not attempted to defame or disparage Stormy Daniels?
Oh, he's not even mentioned her name.
Exactly. But
or Karen McDougal.
But name. Why?
Well, because they're one of the things that she said in the interview last night was he said to her, I guess when she mentioned the spanking portion of it, that nobody had ever talked to him like that.
Right.
So I think there is a level of fear.
But how could he resist that temptation?
Because I would hope that he's resisting that temptation for the sake of Melania.
You know that's not right.
What I mean to say is, like, why flame the fire?
Because he's Donald freaking Trump.
Right, but I that's what I'm saying. I would hope that he's not trying to flame that fire
right.
for the sake of his family.
Yeah, but I think that the longer this goes on, the more likely he is.
He's going to have to respond.
Or he's just going to, his resolve is going to break. And he's just going to fucking do it.
If you remember over the past few weeks, the White House's statements have changed slightly. And a couple of weeks ago, Sarah Huckabee Sanders had come out and gave a statement that was slightly different about whether or not she had spoken to the president about this and whether or not who to refer questions to on this. And Donald Trump did not like her answer, didn't think that it protected him enough. And at the end of the day, you know, it's not the White House's job to protect the president from personal matters.
Nope.
That's his personal lawyer's job. In this case, the White House's job is to protect him from political matters and refer them to the right people. And I think Sarah Huckabee Sanders did her job to say, I don't know, this is not something I want to touch. And she probably got White House counsel probably said, here's what's going on.
Right.
And I think that this is a situation that, you know, Michael Cohen is a long-term problem for Donald Trump in this situation. We've seen a change in Donald Trump's legal defense for Russia. We're probably going to see a change in Donald Trump's legal defense on this piece of it too. And nobody's going to want to touch this, any of this.
Right. And now, because Stormy Daniels' lawyer, Michael Avenatti, tweeted out this picture, or he tweeted out a picture of a disc in a safe.
I saw that.
And said, if a picture is worth 1,000 words, how many words is this worth?
And I always think that that's a little taunt too.
Oh,
to see if Donald Trump's going to respond
but
to
that.
But
he's pushing Trump to break.
Right.
Because when Trump gets involved, when Trump starts tweeting about this, it's going to go downhill real fast.
But here's the other thing, and is that Donald Trump has not yet publicly stated that he's David Dennison yet. Well, because he's already said it's not true. The moment that he gets involved in it is the moment that he's involved.
Right.
And he won't be able to back out of that anymore.
Well, and Stormy Daniels is not the only woman who is telling their story. There's also Karen McDougal, whom we mentioned earlier. She gave an interview with Anderson Cooper about her 10-month-long affair that happened 10 years ago. Maybe a little more. And again, this interview was airing, and during this interview is when Trump tweeted about John Bolton becoming the new national security advisor. And that that timing feels so disgusting to me, because I think in the 14 months Trump has been president, he has proven that he is willing to put the American people at risk to save his own ass. And so something like changing up national security advisor, I believe that he is totally willing to do that to distract from an unflattering interview.
Yeah, but he didn't do that for Stormy Daniels.
No, I know, but
no, I'm saying he didn't do that, which was odd.
Right.
And probably because A, he didn't have anything, and B, because he's terrified of Stormy Daniels.
Right. Right.
I mean, when we say there's a storm coming,
we're not kidding.
We're not kidding.
Right.
What's also interesting, and I know that I've brought up Melania a few times, because I believe that the women involved, the women on the wives have been put in an impossible situation by these people. Donald Trump Jr. last week or 2 weeks ago, you know, first of all, they had already filed for divorce, but now we're getting bits and pieces of probably why they filed for divorce in this Aubrey O'Day situation. And the same thing happening with these women here. Obviously, Stormy, Summer, and Karen are not the first women. We had 14 other women come before that.
Yeah.
So this isn't, but now these women are like, news stories, you know.
Right. Well, and what's interesting is that Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal are not saying they're victims. Actually, Stormy Daniels was very clear. She's like, this is not,
a Me Too movement.
This is not a Me Too story. This was completely consensual, if unenthusiastic. Although, again, we don't have time for it, but I think there's a whole other piece to, you know, unenthusiastic sexual experiences.
I will say she said that it wasn't a Me Too movement. Like the first part, the consensual part, not.
Right.
The threats after that.
Right.
That's when it became, and Anderson Cooper, I felt, probably should have said,
right,
well, don't you feel like they're using Michael Cohen, Donald Trump, these people. I won't even say Donald Trump because it wasn't from him directly,
right?
But it was through his people,
right,
that she felt threatened. And this is a pattern that has happened, obviously,
right,
to women everywhere in different types of careers. So, like, that's where it became a Me Too movement. I felt like Anderson Cooper could have reverted back to that
right.
and said, do you not think that that threat
yes.
of your daughter,
of you,
your daughter,
financial
the parking lot,
ruin,
all that doesn't, you know.
That's abuse.
Yeah, that's abuse. And that is a Me Too movement. That is something
right.
that we can have that conversation about. The first part, yeah, fine. Consensual. Second part,
not so much.
Not so much.
Right. And so it's interesting because there's two... I think it's a really interesting point about the Me Too movement and the threats and the work to silence these women part. And that no matter what the sexual relationship was like, that is abuse and kind of harassment of women. I mean, it's clearly harassment. And you could say sexual harassment because it's based on the fact that she's a woman. But so there's these two parallel narratives, though. There's Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal who are saying we had consensual affairs with Donald Trump. And that is one part of the story. And then the other part of the story is where Summer Zervos comes in. She was a contestant on The Apprentice.
Seems like they've had a lot of affairs in it, because so was Aubrey O'Day.
Yes. So she's saying that she was assaulted by Trump. And she joins at least 17 other women who have also said that they were assaulted, harassed, or violated by Trump. So that's kind of the second layer that we're not talking about right now. But Summer Zervos is suing for defamation. And what's really interesting about that is that she has subpoenaed a whole bunch of documents from Trump during the Trump campaign.
This is where it just gets... It just doesn't stop.
Exactly. Exactly. So this subpoena, you know, if this case isn't dismissed, if this defamation case goes forward, and, you know, Trump is obviously going to fight these subpoenas, but they could theoretically get documents and information that exist about the women who have publicly accused Trump of harassment, or many who probably haven't come forward yet.
Yeah, and I think one of the other interesting parts about the Stormy Daniels interview last night was Anderson asked her if about the text message, things that she was supposed to hand over.
Right.
And she said, I can't talk about that right now. I was like, okay, girl.
Exactly.
That means you have something.
Exactly.
And so...
So I think...
That was a shot across the bow.
Exactly. And so I think that these simultaneous narratives about Trump's problems with women... are connected yet very different in terms of what the outcome and what the consequences could possibly be. All right, Drexel, so let's talk about something positive. What are you grateful for today?
Well, I, like we announced earlier in the show, we've got a new show coming up, a new pod, that's going to be exciting. So, obviously I'm just grateful for the opportunity, to help expand, this takeover of media, and podcast world, and, you know, to partner with you on it and to, really bring, more light onto some of these issues that we care about and
yeah.
that we should be caring about, because that's what really matters at the end of the day. Is we cannot be a strong electorate if we don't have the information. Like, we can talk about this all day, but if we don't know why it's affecting us, how it's going to affect us, then we can't have meaningful conversations, or think that we can sit down with somebody who does not agree with us and be able to take information and do that without being like, oh, well, this is what I read in the New York Times.
Right.
You know, that's all surface level stuff. We want to be able to give you the ammunition. I don't know if that's a good word as we're in the middle of this gun debate, but the opportunity to be able to have those conversations with some facts behind you.
Right. The underlying framework.
The underlying framework for that. Yeah. So yeah, definitely grateful to for this opportunity to kind of do that.
Yeah. I'm so excited about it, Drexel. I seriously can't wait.
Yeah,
it's going to be so fun.
It's going to be a good time.
I love the idea of doing a deeper dive format show, because I love my deep dives, but obviously we have... so much to get to.
Yeah. I mean, move over, Rachel Maddow, because exactly. I'm coming for you.
That's so great.
What are you grateful for?
Well, like I mentioned at the top of the show, I went to the March for Our Lives in downtown Los Angeles this past weekend. And it was such a great showing. It was
the photos looked nuts.
Okay, it was nuts. There were so many people there. I was worried that there weren't going to be that many people there. I thought maybe...
It's LA.
Yeah. But I thought maybe the, like, quote-unquote resistance fatigue or whatever would have been too much. But there were so many people there. It was really emotional for me because there were so many children there. So many children carrying signs that were obviously made by children, right? I saw six-year-olds carrying handwritten signs. I saw teenagers, you know, wearing shirts that said don't shoot. I saw just so many kids. And on the one hand, I'm so, so glad that we're getting children involved in the political process. There were people registering kids to vote because when in California, you can pre-register when you're 16 and it'll automatically sign you up when you're 18. But at the same time, it weighs heavily on me that six-year-olds came out to a march against gun violence because that's not what six-year-olds should be thinking about. You know, I've said it before, but my son's preschool does lockdown drills. And that is something that keeps me up at night. And going to this march was both empowering and very sad. And I, you know, even more so, more emotional for me than even the women's march. Like I'm standing there with my good friend Lindsay reading these signs, just like crying because I feel like this debate is so difficult to have. And there are so many lives at risk that it was very impactful. It was very moving. And it was very difficult. And you know, I was talking to someone the other day when I was putting Thursday's show together. I did another piece about young white men and gun violence. And I was like, you know, researching gun violence and violence against women, I mean, those are the days that I want to quit. But they're also the days that I know that I'm saying something that not a lot of other people are saying. And so I felt like going to this march renewed my sense of I'm doing this because I feel so emotional about it. And that was a really powerful moment for me.
That sounds great. Yeah, it looks like a good time. I loved your photos. And I watched a little bit of what was happening in D.C. and seeing those future elected officials up there. I'm telling you, David Hogg is going to be the United States Senator.
Seriously.
For whatever state.
Right.
Whether or not it's California or Florida.
Right.
You know, will be an elected official at some point. And Emma Gonzalez, she'll run for office at some point, hopefully. And, you know, those are the leaders. I loved that. You know, I read an article this weekend that said that these kids understood how to check their privilege.
Yes. I thought that was great.
And how they went out of their way to remind people that this is, you know, the things that they're talking about that happened in Parkland happened in Chicago, and these cities every day happen to black families. And so like that was very, that's something that we haven't seen yet. And I think that these kids are going to push that narrative further than before, and hopefully the media will do their due diligence and start picking up some of these stories a little bit better. Okay, Devin, it's our favorite time of the Monday. Who is our dickwad of the week?
Week, week, week. Well, it was a close race this week, and we have two. It is Marco Rubio and the entire fucking NRA.
The United States Senator from Florida. And Marco Rubio.
Marco Rubio cannot keep himself off of this dickwad list.
Yeah, he's a bit like Paul Ryan.
Right.
They're both spineless.
Husks of human beings.
Yeah. Like they believe in nothing.
They believe in nothing. And still they insist on opening their big fat mouth.
And running for president.
And running for get the fuck out of here, Marco Rubio. So Marco Rubio said in a statement on Saturday that there are, quote, many other Americans who do not support a gun ban because they view it as a threat to the Second Amendment. So this is in response to the March for Our Lives. He also said, quote, while I do not agree with all of the solutions they propose, I respect their views and recognize that many Americans support certain gun bans. Those against gun bans want to prevent mass shootings, but they view banning guns as an infringement on the Second Amendment rights of law-abiding citizens that will ultimately not prevent these tragedies. I have a question.
What's your question, dude?
Yeah. How do you have a mass shooting without access to, you know, heavy duty firearms?
That's a good question. You know, sometimes when Marco says stuff, I don't think he thinks it through properly. But I also want to know why he felt the need to send this statement out.
Just say it. Just keep your mouth shut.
Like, he could have just let the whole day go by and not said a word.
Right.
He could have said this during the gun debate.
Right.
No. Like during this, you know, as you know, the president's already come out with a certain guidelines. So why rock the boat?
Why say anything?
Did anybody, like, I feel like he was pressured by the NRA.
Right.
Which is what these kids have been saying.
Right. They actually, the kids wore price tags that had $1.05 written on them, because that represents the amount of money that the NRA donated to Marco Rubio divided by the number of students in Florida. So each kid is worth just over $1 to Rubio.
I would love if people sent like fake nickels.
Yeah.
To the Rubio office.
Yeah.
These kids sent fake. That would be so good.
That'd be really good. Yeah. Because apparently that's what their lives are worth to Marco Rubio.
Wouldn't just drop, like, have a whole like photo op
yeah.
where they're dumping Nichols. Like the little Monopoly money,
yeah.
5 cents to the Rubio yep. office. Get on that, young people.
Young people. And then, you know, he also, well, and if you remember back at the CNN town hall in February, Rubio said that he was not swayed by the NRA's money, but by the millions of members that make up the NRA.
Yeah, sure, Jen.
whatever.
Whatever. If those millions of voters were in Florida, I could see that.
Right.
But that's not the case.
Right. And then the NRA is also our dishonored dickwad. Always, just every week, assume that that's always the case. But there was a particular vomit-inducing video that NRA TV put out entitled A March for Our Lies. It was a membership drive video, and that said, quote, stand and fight for our kids' safety by joining the NRA. Today's protests aren't spontaneous. Gun-hating billionaires and Hollywood elites are manipulating and exploiting children as part of their plan to destroy the Second Amendment and strip us of our right to defend ourselves and our loved ones. And then he went on to say, the host addressed the Parkland students and said that if their friends hadn't died, quote, no one would know your names.
Yeah, when I say, and I posted this the other day, I was like, when people say that the, like, when I say, like, probably once a month, that the NRA is a terrorist organization, this is why. Like, this is invoking terror to push your political agenda.
And that to make more money.
That is the definition of terrorism, and that. The other thing that came out this weekend as a part of this March for Our Lives thing was that Bernie Sanders' surrogate, Killer Mike, had also appeared in an NRA video over the weekend. I don't know if it was the same one, because I don't spend a lot of time watching NRA videos.
I do not either.
But I do. I did read the transcript, and I did see a few things that said that Killer Mike had come out and kind of said that, you know, had some words about the Second Amendment and Second Amendment rights, that it made it seem like he supported that the NRA's positions on certain things. He was doing an interview. But which did not surprise me, because what we know about some of these faux progressives is that they will, you know, when I remember Barack Obama, you know, used this line against Hillary Clinton, which whatever, you know, they'll do and say anything to get elected. This is what those people on the Nina Turners and the Bernie Sanders of the worlds will do. They will, and their surrogates, they will do or say anything to sway public opinion when you're supposed to be fighting for those who are spending their time advocating for lives.
Yeah.
And Killer Mike had to issue an apology, which he did today. If you follow him on Twitter, and I don't follow
him.
Too late. And, you know, people said, oh, okay. You know, he just said, I participated. He tried to say, I participated in something the way that Dr. King would by.
Please go take a long walk off of a short pier.
Yeah. You know, he was like, you know, this is what Dr. King would do. He would, you know, go out there and talk to people people he disagreed with. And so I wanted to do the same thing. But that's not how it came off. And it came off as you agreeing with some of the things. And that's the way that the NRA spun it. And they used you to their advantage, just like they would have Bernie Sanders had he been the Democratic nominee for president.
Exactly. One of my favorite signs I saw at the march, by the way, was just a sign that said, yes, we are trying to take your guns away.
Oh, I mean, just direct.
Yeah, just direct.
All right, Devin. Great episode today.
Yes.
Glad that Marco Rubio and the NRA and at this point Killer Mike are all dickwads of the week.
Three-way tie.
Yeah. Had a really great march on Saturday. Really great action piece on that.
Yes.
So what is another action item for our listeners?
So I think just one. Just keep it simple. There is so much going on. Obviously, John Bolton's a hot mess. There's a lot going on with Russia. But this week, focus on calling your representatives about gun control and gun reform. This debate needs to happen. This is the moment to do it. We need to carry the momentum that the Parkland, Florida survivors have sparked and get something done.
And not only call them, but demand town halls.
Yes.
So that they have to be front and center with their constituents.
Face to face.
Face to face. And you can ask them questions about their positions on it. And they're on the record, not only on the floor of the Senate, but they're on the record in front of their constituents about that.
Right.
And if you don't like what they have to say, then you vote them out.
Right.
Or you run for office yourself. But get them in a position to where they have to do this. So don't just call them and tell them that you disagree with and you want gun reform. Give them a solution.
Right.
And say, here's what we need you to do. Can you come and talk to us? Can you come and talk to your constituents about that?
Right. Right. Make them work for you.
Because that's their...
That's literally...
That's their job.
No, that's literally their job. So, all right, Drexel, like you said, great show. I'm so excited to launch your new show, Bleep What You Heard, with Drexel Hurd and friends.
Follow the Bleeping Pod on Twitter.
Yes.
And, of course, follow Devin and I on Twitter as well.
We're very fun.
Yeah.
So thank you all for listening so much, and I will see you back here on Thursday.